Oh, look, what do you say we just talk?
Talk? What a concept.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is a big one. It's chunky, it's big, it's double-sized, it's, ooh, extra large. It's season 2, episode 31, Till Death Do Us Part. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners.
So, I have some pod business, if you don't mind. Shall we?
Go for it.
All right. Again with this episode 23, dropping November 13th, let's talk about the series premiere of Models, Inc.
Yeah.
On the internet.
Mm-hmm.
If you know where to look.
Yep.
Check every nook and cranny. Don't ask us for more information, but do some sleuthing.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you are listening to this podcast on the day it comes out, it is also the day that 90210MG, the Jenny Garth and Tori Spellings 90210 recap podcast, premieres. It's an iHeartRadio joint, but as far as we can tell, it's also available on regular podcast apps. I did subscribe to it in Pocket Casts. If you can't find it when you search 90210MG, try the letter O. I can't remember. One worked, the other didn't. I forget which was which. So it is there. You can find it.
So, the first episode of our podcast, recapping the highlights and lowlights of their recap podcast, which we are calling Again With Them, will be available at the end of this month to Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. If you're already there, you're all set. If you're not, but you're interested, you can kick up that pledge at any time to access that content.
That's correct. So, join us for all of this and so much more at patreon.com/againwiththis. Now to this episode. Dave already warned you, it is big, large. It is as large as Jake's pants have suddenly gotten the end of this season.
Oh God.
It's real big.
That's large, folks.
It's big. I mean, it was a double length episode. It was the season finale, and it unlike 90210, when they have a double episode and it's a ton of filler, it's a double episode and a lot happens. Really a lot.
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's get into it. Starting with the C-plot, Chaz sues Amanda and Jake isn't much help. So Allison and her wedding bullshit is primarily in the B-plot, but like everyone goes to the wedding, so it kind of oozes everywhere. We'll get to it, but there's wedding content all over the episode, so just be aware. Since this clip primarily pertains to Amanda and her relationship drama, the first we see of her is when she knocks on Allison's door before work to say, clip two.
Here's your bridesmaid's dress. Give it to a friend if you have any left.
Look, I still want you to...
To be in your wedding? After what you did to me? Only you, Allison, would try to ruin someone's life and then expect them to shower you with rose petals.
Fine. If that's the way you want it.
Oh, by the way, your wedding gift arrived today from Tiffany's. Beautiful piece of crystal. Looks great in my apartment.
Oh.
Okay.
A little disappointed that Amanda said Tiffany's and
yes,
not Tiffany.
Thank you.
But I'll allow it because the rest of it is so good.
Yeah. I love that, like, when she's being her bitchiest to Allison, she mm-hmm. completely projects this, like, competence at villainy
yeah.
onto Allison that only she possesses. Allison is just this, like, fallen souffle of a person
yeah.
that, like, is not schemey the same way Amanda is. So it's always really funny to be like, only you would expect, like, Allison expects nothing
right.
from life.
Mm-hmm.
Except, like, flannel pajama bottoms. That's it.
I honestly am surprised that she even asked Amanda to be her bridesmaid, frankly. Like, why? Why would you think that you had that relationship ever, honestly?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just one of those, like, economy of bridesmaid characters
sure,
things. Like,
sure.
Why are Jackie's bridesmaids 16-year-olds? do we want an answer to that? We don't.
Fair enough.
I will say the wedding timeline has been very lurchy up to this point. So I'm glad we're finally at the fireworks factory, even though the writers often seem to forget that fireworks had even been scheduled on this date.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Yes. So Jake is at Joe's watching all of this go down. And to Joe's questions, he admits he still isn't sure what he's going to say to Amanda. Joe, to her credit, does not remind him that he had told her the day before it was over between him and Amanda, which made it seem like they had already had it out, though Joe certainly could say that. I would. But instead, what she does say is that whatever conversation he does have with Amanda will not be easy, and Amanda's probably going to turn it around on him no matter what plan he goes in with. Oh, Joe, think he's going to have a plan.
Yeah. Oh, honey.
Sweet of you. So Jake smirks at her, thinking he would be so easily manipulated, but she says it's that he has feelings for two women, and that's dangerous for everyone involved. Jake says that Joe was first, and that never really ended, but which is a weird thing to say because, like, it's been a whole season, but all right. But she says that doesn't matter. She was doing fine without him, and she truly was, from what we saw. But Jake promises that he'll work this out, and Joe does not look convinced. So then Amanda's working at her desk in shades of blush and bashful, which you can see in the visual aids, when Hillary comes stomping in black to see her. Amanda obviously knows what this is about and calmly says she had a good reason for firing Chaz, and it's better for Hillary not to know what it is. And Hillary says she can handle it, so Amanda tells a sanitized version of what happened, which is that Chaz tried to hit on her, and she shut him down. Not that he successfully kissed her. Before we play that clip, yes, Dave?
I have a production note, which is, you know, often we're like, well, there's somebody mowing the lawn 2 yards over with his industrial John Deere, and that's going to make some noise. Or perhaps they're continuing to put Google Fiber in the front yard with their sawing machines. Today we have a pretty windy day, and if you hear clunk, 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 it's our pecan tree shedding pecans, slamming on top of the roof of our recording studio. So that's a new one for me, but if you hear some small, nutty explosions, that's what it is.
It's not Dave, for once.
That's what she said.
All right, so wow, please really? Play clip 3.
But I'm sorry it happened, and that you had to find out about his character this way. But isn't it better that you know now than until after you're married?
Chaz loves me, Amanda. He wouldn't destroy that by trying to seduce my daughter. But you're just out to hurt me. Since the day I walked back into your life, you have been practically panting for revenge. I thought the love that I had in my heart would somehow supersede those feelings. But you just can't forgive me, can you?
It's not me, I swear. This is about Chaz. How can you take his side against me?
Maybe because I know him better.
He's a liar, and God knows what else. How can you be so naive?
On the contrary, Amanda. You're naive if you think that I can't see through that transparent ploy of yours. Unfortunately, you bombed out big time, sweetie. Chaz and I are more committed now than ever. Pity I can't say the same for you and me.
Go ahead, Mother. Walk out. But this time, promise me you'll stay away for good.
Oh, no. The only thing I'm going to promise you is that there's going to be hell to pay. You'll see, Amanda. You'll see.
This is so soapy. Like, I mean, the mother choosing Chaz over Amanda. Like, what was the... I know the point of getting to here is, you know, to launch the Models, Inc. spinoff, obviously, but it's like...
Right.
Why were you working so hard to try to have a relationship with Amanda if as soon as it hit any bump in the road, you were just going to be like, well, this guy I've known for 3 seconds is probably telling the truth, and my daughter, who I'm desperate to get to know again, is probably lying. Like, oh, okay, Hillary, whatever.
Well, and also, you have no skis radar at all?
Seriously.
In your industry? Like, were your models all Mennonites? Right. Are you a Mennonite?
Right. Yeah.
It's Chaz. Ugh. All right. Well, we'll soon be rid of him, so let's get on with it.
Yes. All of this is very improbable. So later, Amanda finds Bruce in the conference room along with the agency's entire legal team because D&D's been slapped with a $10 million sexual harassment suit by Chaz naming Amanda as the culprit, Clifford.
Chaz is filing a sexual harassment suit against me? But that's outrageous. I never harassed Chaz. In fact, it was quite the opposite. He came on to me so many times that I had to fire him.
Oh, and you never told anyone about this?
How could I? He was my mother's fiancé. I was stuck between a rock and a hard place, if you'll excuse the expression. Getting rid of him was the only answer.
Despite the fact that his job performance was more than satisfactory.
Not in my book.
What Chaz is alleging here, Amanda, is that once he was hired, he was subject to your, and I quote, I, Chaz Russell, am alleging that Amanda Woodward subjected me to constant and relentless sexual insinuations, flirtations, and provocations that made working at D&D advertising an unbearable experience. It quickly became evident that my primary responsibility was to service Miss Woodward and that I was to perform this function at the risk of termination. When it became clear to her that I would not respond to her advances, my worst fears were confirmed, and I was promptly dismissed.
That's a lie. All of it. But don't tell me you don't believe me.
Trust me, Amanda, I would love to believe every word of your story. Because based on what Chaz says here, we're in a deep, deep mess.
Exactly. Bruce, buddy. It's Chaz. Like,
yeah.
The rhyming alone.
I mean.
And also, his job performance was more than satisfactory.
No, no.
Starting a poker night while having a mullet is not job performance. It's being a twat.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Brutal. However, someone should be tracking, you know, how Amanda's story is changing every time she tells it, because it's true in the main, but the differences are, you know, very notable, because she's leaving out the part where, like, you know, they kissed and she was complicit in that part of it, but whatever.
Yeah.
So that night, while Allison's settling her parents in, and we will certainly get to them, Amanda comes to the door again. Allison's trying to be cordial and or save face by introducing Amanda to her parents, or just hoping that saying these older people are her parents will prevent Amanda from causing a scene. It does not. Clip five.
Do you have any idea what your big mouth has started? Any idea?
Amanda.
Chaz has filed a lawsuit against me, alleging sexual harassment. Well, maybe you know all about it, since you're probably in for a piece of the action.
Amanda, I think you better just leave.
I'm going to win this case, Allison. And when it's over, you're going down with Chaz.
Phrasing.
Yeah. I mean, here again, that she just is like emptying, like she brought a gun to a spork fight, basically. Like Allison is just like blinking beigely.
Uh-huh.
And Amanda's like slapping her in the face with a glove. Like, okay. This is not a worthy opponent. Bring it down a notch.
Not. And this is a trend that continues, because the next day, Amanda's on her way out to work in a sedate black suit, but with, of course, the shortest skirt in creation, when she looks up to see Jake helping Joe wrestle a crib into her apartment and decides to be as bitchy about it as possible in clip six.
Yeah. Excuse me. Is it just my imagination, or were we supposed to be having a relationship?
Amanda, this isn't the time.
But I guess this is what you've been waiting for. Any lame excuse to get back together with Joe.
Look, maybe the two of you need to go talk in private.
Why? There are no secrets here. It's obvious you've been trying to steal Jake back since the day he dumped you. And now you're using this baby to reel him back in? Pathetic.
You listen to me, you two-faced little hypocrite. I have nothing to do with this.
Joe's right, Amanda's got nothing to do with her and everything to do with you and me.
Then quit hiding behind Little Miss Helpless here and talk to me. I will not be shut out.
I told you, I can't be with someone who cheats on me every time I turn my back.
Everything is so black and white with you, isn't it, Jake? That's why you're a loser, and you always will be for the rest of your life.
Really?
Well, that's not why, but... Also, you Frenched Chaz. Sit with that. Get back to us.
Yeah, this is what all of this anger is about. Like, turn it inside rather than projecting
Seriously.
It outward. But also, like, can one of you, Amanda or Jake, please just say, I dump you and you are thusly dumped so that there is clarity on this. Like, please, for the love of God, because God.
Yeah,
but
really?
No. So when Amanda gets to the office, Bruce says both sides have agreed to binding arbitration on Chaz's case, which means a judge will hear it and render a verdict. And then it's starting the day after tomorrow. And Amanda's ready for Chaz to be exposed as a liar. And Bruce certainly hopes that's how it goes. But if Amanda has any incidents in her past, now is the time for her to come clean about them. And she repeats that she's innocent, and it'll come down to her word against his. But Bruce knows that's not quite right, because he has heard from Chaz's lawyer. How? Nice lawyering.
Yeah, really.
That Chaz will be calling a witness. Does Amanda know who it could be? And Amanda does some nice fancy footwork, because she does, but she tells Bruce she doesn't, and then goes straight to Amanda's desk, or Allison's desk, rather. Allison confirms that she has been called and is not psyched about testifying the day before her wedding. And then it's time for Amanda to try to walk back some of her recent bitchery so Allison will not destroy her in the hearing. Clip 7.
Obviously, all this has put me under an enormous amount of pressure. So if there's anything that I said the other night that you might have misconstrued as hostile, I hope you'll forgive me.
Of course.
Look, Allison, I know we've had our differences. Now you have everything you want. A man who loves you, a wonderful job, a boss who respects and values your work.
What are you getting at?
I don't know what you think you saw, but the truth is, Chaz came on to me and I resisted. I'm the one who should be suing for sexual harassment. You have the power to end this fiasco if you'll just get up there on the stand and tell them you didn't see a thing.
I'm sorry. I can't lie under oath. I just can't.
Misconstrued. Amanda.
This is one of my favorite things about Amanda Woodward, is when she has to turn on a dime and start spinning.
Yeah.
Like, she's super sorry, or aren't we besties? Like, she's so plastic and obvious about it.
Yes.
That it's almost believable. It's really amazing.
Yep.
Heather Locklear, Ladies of Germs. Mm-hmm. Well done.
She's really good. I mean, she's good at as exactly as you said, like, at conveying how bad she is.
Yeah. Like, aren't you in advertising? Why is this so flagrant? Okay.
Yep. Amanda's surprised to see Chaz back at the office a day early for the hearing, but Hillary is also there with him, and both of them know when Amanda is about to find out from Bruce. Clip 8.
Good news. The insurance company has suggested we settle for $500,000 and an admission of guilt on your part.
You can't do this. I'm innocent.
Well, innocent or guilty, it's irrelevant at this point. It all comes down to who the judge will believe tomorrow, and neither myself nor my insurers want to bet millions of dollars that he's going to swallow your version of events.
This is outrageous.
Phrasing.
I will not be bullied into signing a false admission of guilt, and there's no way you can make me do it.
Fine. But if you lose this case for the company, not only are you fired, but I'll make it my business to guarantee you never work in this industry again.
I can live with that. Thanks for your support, boss.
Thanks, anyone, for Googling employment law.
Yeah. But also, like, I mean, he does kind of have her dead to rights, whatever the circumstances we saw specifically. Like, we don't know what the employee handbook says. You know, he was her direct report. So if they kissed, especially in the office, like, that kind of is sexual harassment, because, you know, it's not
hostile environment.
Right.
Yeah. Also, she didn't hire him through proper channels. I am positive.
She did not. No. No, she didn't. So she's really sticking to her guns in a very strange way, considering how culpable she actually is. But okay.
I guess she's like, look, I'm in the credits. This is special guest star. Not concerned. This is an outrage. Stomp, stomp, stomp. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. So Amanda's day is not going to get better when she shuffles into the courtyard and sees Jake waiting for her so that he can say they need to talk. He thinks what they both need right now is space to sort their stuff out, but she tearfully says she actually needs someone to believe in her, and he is not a monster, so he hugs her. And then some, because when we see them next, it's the next morning, and they're waking up together in her bed. Oh, Jake. Clip 9.
I'm just grateful that we work things out. That you trust me and you believe in me.
Of course I believe in you, but sometimes...
And I know now that your feelings for Joe are just what any decent guy would feel for a friend in a jam. We have something so much deeper than that. Don't we?
Yeah, we do.
But... Now that I'm in a jam, I need your strength and your attention to help me through this trial.
I'll be there for you, Amanda. I promise.
That's all I ever wanted.
Well, neither he nor Joe probably saw this coming as the way she would suck him back in, but good job, Amanda, because it worked.
Yep.
So then after some antique courthouse B-roll, which you can see in the visual aids, we go inside to the hearing. Hillary and Jake are both present, which seems inappropriate. Like, why would they be sitting at the table with their loved ones and their lawyers? But whatever. Chaz's testimony is a mix of truth and lies, mostly the latter. And when he pretends to get emotional about the part of the story where they supposedly did sex, Amanda can't help yelling that he's full of shit, which is also when we see her attorney is the same one who represented Joe on her murder charge, which seems like probably excessive amount of lawyering for the circumstances, but fine.
Maybe that's who the Pride of Hamilton Law, Matt, last name. Right. I totally forgot his last name. He
Durning.
Was a zero.
Durning.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bought and his practice from.
We should say here, because someone, our listener, Adam P., asked us on Twitter, do we think that they actually did have sex after Chaz closed the blinds? I don't either.
My rationale is that, especially on soaps in the 90s, where, like, you know, not that they necessarily got into this, but at this point in the treatment of HIV/AIDS life cycle, they kind of had to not hedge it.
Right.
But it's a soap. Like, they are pretty clear about what you're supposed to think in terms of what base people were on. And
right.
I don't think it went much beyond Frenching, even though that went on for a really long time. Like, I get that you would assume that once the blinds were closed, they boned down, but the audience would have been informed, I feel.
Right. I do. I think
we were
so
supposed
too.
To conclude that.
Yeah. I think that Chaz wanted Allison to think that they did.
Yes.
For sure.
Absolutely.
But based on Amanda's reaction when Jake stormed into her apartment in the last episode and demanded to know whether she had slept with Chad, and the anger that she reacted with, I think we were supposed to read as genuine. Like, usually,
yeah,
because everyone on TV, as we have talked about before, is a terrible liar, including Amanda usually. You know, I think there would have been more ambiguity about, like, no, what? How could you possibly blah, blah, blah? Like, if he had said, well, did you kiss him?
Totally.
Then, you know, it would have been different.
Yeah.
But how angry she was when he accused her, I think we were supposed to read as genuine. So I don't think they did.
Agree.
However, in Chaz's version, Amanda demanded that he sex her up to pay her back for her having hired him, and that she said she would fire him if he didn't, and tell Hillary that he had come on to her. So then Amanda takes a stand and says she had no particular animosity toward Hillary and no sexual designs on Chaz, which is credible. She does accurately describe how hard he came on to her before she hired him, but then her version departs from the truth too, kind of. Clip 10.
And he finally tried to force himself on me, and I was fed up. So I fired him.
Why do you suppose he would do that? I mean, it seems a very dangerous kind of game to play.
I don't know. I didn't ask him. I just fired him. I wanted Chaz Russell as far away from me as possible.
Well, all you would have to do would be tell your mother. His relationship with her would be ruined.
Well, he knew that although I don't really have any problems with my mother, that we're not all that close. And she probably wouldn't believe me.
And the judge at this point makes a very sad face, which I thought was a nice touch. Like, he's very invested in Hillary and Amanda's relationship.
Yeah.
Just funny. But yeah, that's not what happened, girl. You kissed, and then a lot of other stuff happened, and then you fired him like several days later. But sure.
Yeah. Like, he's allowed to just be a scumbag. You don't have to bring attempted rape into it.
Yeah. When we resume, Allison and her very virginal white suit are up. It does not take much for Chaz's lawyer to get Allison to say that Amanda is a tough boss and that she seemed to like Chaz's work at first, but that her attitude toward him changed after the incident in the conference room, which, by the way, he did not ask about. Allison just volunteers in classic TV legal testimony style, which is not how it actually goes. Allison says she saw them kissing and that how Chaz characterized it to her afterward. And the lawyer asks if she thinks it's probable that Amanda and Chaz ended up boning based on what she did see. And though she tries to avoid answering, she finally says she does think it's possible. And apparently that's it. And the judge will be back with a decision in 48 hours. And then it's the next day. And Mr. Parker's pompously supervising while workers put plywood and shit over the pool so that Allison and Billy can get married on it. Unlike Sydney, apparently Billy and Allison never read their lease because this is all brand new news to Amanda, who comes tearing down the stairs to yell at him that no one got her permission. And Joe cheerily comes out to ask what all this noise is about, which is when she sees Jake pulling his t-shirt on right behind Amanda in her shorty robe. Joe's heartbreaking, and Jake realizes how bad he fucked up, and from the bottom of the stairs calls up clip 11.
Listen, we need to talk.
No, I don't. I can see what you're up to, Jake.
It's not what it seems. Well, it is.
Joe, you thought he would have a plan? He doesn't have a plan.
Yeah.
Also,
it's Amanda. Like,
yeah.
Unless she moves away or dies, not like soap dies, like actually dies, you're not going to win that. Just give up.
True. Also, this is day two of Jake waking up in Amanda's bed, and this is the first time he's run into Joe in all that time. You all live in the same complex, but whatever. Joe says she doesn't have time for this and fucks off. And by the pool, Allison tries to do damage control about her testimony. Amanda doesn't really want to hear it, but ends by saying she's not a witch. Debatable. And Allison can have her wedding there as long as someone gets rid of everything that night. And then Jake comes back down and Amanda asks if Joe's having a hard time dealing with reality. Cold.
Wow. Jake
covers that she just wants to know when he's going to finish building the crib. And Amanda says this, clip 12.
Well, why don't we finish the job you started for me this morning?
I mean, it does seem like actual hammering shouldn't have been enough to distract you from that, but okay.
No, it doesn't. Jake tries to beg off, but we're all pretty sure he's going to go ahead and do that. So then Joe's on her way to check on Allison when she runs into Jake instead. She actually seems legitimately over him, as she says she mistook her gratitude for his friendly attention for something else, but they're not meant to get back together, and they're not going to. And he tries to protest that the moment they had was real and explain what happened with Amanda, but she interrupts to say if she were a guy, she would be attracted to Amanda too. Once again, queering Joe, I am just saying, I'm not making this stuff up. But the end of her spiel is that Jake is in love with two people but can only have one, and it's not her because it's the 90s and people weren't doing throuples or threesomes then. Slightly later, while everyone is fidgeting waiting for Allison to make her appearance at the wedding, Amanda, who really went all out with her wedding look in a... Do you want to talk about it?
I mean, she's probably not the worst on offer.
No.
But backless, black, scoop neck, halter, micro mini dress with a half updo held in place by a giant claw clip is a choice.
Yeah.
And... the fact is, if this were just to be shady to Allison, I would support it. But this is what she would actually wear to any wedding.
That's true.
No.
I mean, to be fair to her, it's what she's wearing to a wedding in, like, the space that she normally walks through to, like, get her fucking mail. So, you know, whatever. Like, they're probably lucky she's not in shorts, I guess, but
yeah.
Anyway, that's what she's wearing when she complains to Jake, clip 13.
Wish Allison would get her butt out here. I have a meeting to get to.
Oh, come on now. You'd be nervous too if you were getting married.
Well, I'm never going to let that happen, so I don't have to worry about it.
Uh-oh. Keep that in mind, Jake. So when even more time passes, Amanda grouses that Allison's behavior is verging on rude. Joe, standing next to her, serenely suggests that Amanda think about someone other than herself for once, and Amanda gets sick of all the self-righteous jerks giving her attitude, like, who other than Joe? But anyway, then she storms off to the meeting that she says she's been late for, which seems to be with Hillary at her place. She's not there, but Chaz is in the backyard, smugly telling Amanda that even if she were, Hillary would not be interested in anything Amanda had to tell her, Amanda having decisively burned that bridge. Amanda says Hillary told her that she would see her, but Chaz claims he advises Hillary on all her appointments, and they agreed this would be a bad one for her to keep. Again, this goon controlling a supposed boss bitch like Hillary does not scan. Like,
no.
Ridiculous. Like, he is sitting there in shorts and, like, flip-flops while he reads the paper. Like, no. But anyway. He thinks he has dismissed Amanda by telling her to have fun on the unemployment line, but seeming genuinely vulnerable, she asks Chaz why he's trying to ruin her. He asks if she's wearing a wire and keeps calling her sweetheart and offering to pat her down and so forth. And then cut to the front door. Hillary comes in with Terry, talking model talk about her latest job. In the back, apparently satisfied that Amanda's clean, Chaz tells the truth, while inside, Hillary proves to have the best hearing of anyone on television as she perfectly makes out everything he's saying, even though he's more than 10 feet away. Clip 14.
It's simple, Amanda. I live by my wits. Your mother's fine and all, but I can't survive on the crumbs she's throwing me.
I need some of my own money. Besides, this arrangement is getting tired. I'm ready to move on to someone my own age. Too bad you weren't more receptive.
My mother will see through you eventually, Chaz. She's not stupid.
Oh, yeah? Well, I've got her believing her own daughter lied to her. Anyway, by the time she figures it out, I'll have collected the money from the suit and be long gone.
You listen to me, you cheap hustler. Somehow, I'm not going to let this happen to me or my mother.
Hey, babe, you don't have any credibility. You're just like your mother, washed up.
Ooh.
Well, yeah, and once again, I'm thrown back to remembering Derek in Rushmore talking about giving hand jabs by the pool. Like, there's just nothing about this Bloomfield Hills ape drape motherfucker that works in this storyline. The casting is absolutely terrible. The actor is, like, not bad. Mm-hmm. It's just wrong.
Right. Yeah. I live by my wits. Oh, okay.
No, in an alley like Ray and Graff. All right, buddy.
So then it's time for the judge's decision. Comes down to whom to believe. He finds Chaz is by far the more credible, but before he states his ruling, Hillary gets up with what she thinks is some very relevant information she didn't have before. Says she's a witness for the defense. Chaz's lawyer is pissed, but the judge is a messy bitch who lives for drama. Clip 15.
This is highly irregular.
Yes, of course it is. That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. Come sit next to us.
He also calls her dear before she starts, LOL. So not only does Hillary report what she overheard, but she also checked on Chaz's CV, finally, and determined it's all lies. Which, like, she didn't do this before. A.
Yeah.
B. Amanda
also,
didn't do this.
Tell us more then. We're also messy bitches. Hello.
Yeah. Also, Amanda didn't do this ever when she hired him for a job, but fine. The judge is ready for Hillary to debunk Chaz point by point, and everyone, including the score, is happy to see Amanda validated as though she did not also totally lie her face off in a legal proceeding, but okay. I mean, as you said, she's the one who's in the opening credits, so I guess this is the outcome we're happy with. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, adios to the Chazzer, so yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, definitely. So in the hall afterward, Chaz grabs Hillary by the arm to say he would have shared the money with her and call her a crazy bitch. And as Amanda's lawyer stands between them, Hillary orders Chaz to have his shit out of her house before she gets home, or her new lawyer will have her have him impounded. And as Jake goes to get the car, Hillary tells Amanda she's sorry for so much, but especially for not believing her. And Amanda appreciates what she did, but if this is about them starting over, they tried. Hillary just wants her daughter back, and it's nice for Amanda to know that Hillary finally came through for her, but it's too little too late. I mean, it truly is. Like, that part of the story they built well. Like, they did try a bunch of times, and Hillary really did fall short.
Yeah. So, also, if you have, like, goss on Palmer and why you left, lead with that.
Right.
Otherwise, don't imply that you had your reasons and then never tell us. Otherwise, why are we watching this stupid soap? Come on.
Exactly. Anyway, so they leave it at she can't take back the past, but if Amanda ever wants to talk or see her, the door is open. And Amanda doesn't seem to want to talk in the elevator because the door closes on her, and Hillary seems to respect that, and that's it. But we will see her in Models, Inc.
Done.
Moving on to the B plot. Allison finally deciphers her nightmares while, for Matt, Billy's best man is a dream. See what it did there? When we join Allison, she is reading a wedding RSVP, clip 16.
Dear Allison, thank you for your invitation. It is lovely. Unfortunately, I will be unable to attend. I wish you and Billy much happiness in your lives together. Kindest regards, Meredith. Can you believe that?
Well, at least it was polite.
Polite? Billy, she's my sister. Not only is she not coming to my wedding, she's kissing me off for good.
I didn't hear that.
No, I didn't either.
I mean, it's cold.
I mean,
it's,
kindest it, regards is...
It's real
rigid.
Cold.
Yeah.
That's A. B, since when do you have a sister? Like, was she even mentioned in the episode where Allison goes home to Wisconsin?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, I guess I know why she didn't go, but I'm pretty sure
maybe she sprinted over from Andrea's wedding.
Anyway, what's that in Billy's hand? Oh, it's a lampshade. Clip 17.
It's not like you guys are exactly close. I mean, you never talk. In fact, you've hardly mentioned her the entire time we've been together.
Yeah, before
okay,
that even.
Okay, writers. Thanks.
Is it a lampshade? I guess it's hang a lantern, not a lampshade. Anyway, either way.
Look, it's a wedding. There's booze. Lampshade. I like it.
Right. So Allison exposits that Meredith went away to school when Allison was 10. She didn't come home much after that. Allison had to get her address to send the invitation from her alumni directory, which, yikes. Also, yeah. Given what we're about to confirm, way to look out for your other female sibling, Meredith. Anyway, Allison can't stop thinking about what she or her parents could have done to drive Meredith away. Billy doesn't think Allison should let it bum her out 3 days before her wedding. His own mother isn't coming, if it's any consolation, but at least they came up with a too-sick-to-travel cover story for her, which is more than they ever bothered to do in the later years with 90210 stars who left.
Yeah.
Speaking of people's parents.
Not lupus.
Speaking of people's parents, when we next see Allison, she's driving hers back from the airport, presumably. It's their first time in the city since a one-day stopover years ago. But Mr. Parker says that was plenty, so got it. Den of sin with a freeway, blah, blah, blah. Instead of bothering to defend L.A., Allison says she got a letter from Meredith, and both parents are shocked to hear that name and don't even know where she currently lives. Allison says she's in San Francisco and also that she only wrote to say she's not coming and didn't send a phone number. She just wonders why anyone in the what anyone in the family did to make Meredith hate them all so much. I don't know, Allison. I don't even know you, and I kind of hate you, but
yeah.
Mr. Parker's got theories. Clip 18.
Listen, Allison, Meredith has been in cults. She's done drugs. She's been brainwashed against us. There just comes a time when you got to say you've done the best you can, and that's all you can do.
And just write her off?
No, Pumpkin, we're not writing her off. She's written us off. I mean, after all, she's not even coming to her own sister's wedding.
Maybe you're right.
Of course I'm right. Now, I refuse to hear any more of this talk. My little baby's getting married. I'm here to celebrate. Okay.
She was in a cult? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. was that her that Greg Jarrett married at the Milletting?
It's funny because in the next episode, we're going to see Sydney reading a tabloid at the hospital. And there's a headline about like 30-year-old marries 60-something. But yeah, it's not Greg. Yeah. Cult membership is a weird thing to yada yada dad. But anyway. Later that night, the Parkers are making up the futon since Billy's giving up his room for them to sleep in. And I guess Allison is still not just telling them she and her fiance share a bed and fuck. Also, stay in a hotel, Parkers. You're in your 50s and apparently financially comfortable, and the bride and groom are going to have shit to do. But for now, Billy's just having a beer at Shooters with Rob, his best man, and Rob's very prominent front teeth, which you can see in the visual aids. They were all I could see. He's not unhandsome, but the teeth are, you know, they're just
he's
very noticeable.
I sort of appreciated that they weren't the same, like the same sort of factory extruded teeth. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone has.
Yeah.
On TV that he's like, hi, this is my eye tooth. I didn't have it fixed. Hello, Tara. Like, okay. He's cute, I thought.
Sure.
More for me.
Lots more. He brings up some broad named Donna, and Billy says he hasn't talked to her since she dumped him for a guy who was pre-med. Rob remembers Donna had Billy crazed and desperate for months, and Billy shoots back that Rob never falls hard because he never gets committed, and then jokes, or is it, that maybe he should call Donna and tell her he's off the market for good. But first, he has to rent his tuxedo for the wedding, which is what we see him doing next with Mr. Parker, and also Rob and Matt messing with their bow ties, and also Jake getting his pants hemmed. Billy's waited until this moment to tell Jake that after their whole big fight, Billy picked another best man, and Jake is shocked, like, why? I don't think he even accepted. The next thing that happened after Billy asked him was Jake punched him in the face, but still, Jake shakes it off, saying he probably would have lost the ring anyway, and he's there for Billy no matter what, which, good for him. And then Matt asks if Billy wants to have lunch, but since Billy has to get back to work and has left Rob with nothing to do, he asks if Matt can entertain him that afternoon, and Matt is like, I also have a job, but he is nice and agrees. And we don't see whatever they did that afternoon, whether it is, as Billy suggested, Universal Studios or the Tar Pits. Thanks, Billy. But they end up at Shooters, where else? And we learned that Rob and Billy were paired as roommates freshman year, which I thought Billy lived at home, but okay. And we're both huge slobs. Clip 19.
Our major criteria for dating girls back then was, would they clean our room?
So was Billy ever serious about anyone in college?
Oh, yeah. He was into serial monogamy. Every single girl he met was the one, especially this one chick, Donna Fleming. Broke his heart. But I guess the buck stops here. With Allison, I mean.
Yeah. How about you? Were you serious about anyone?
Yeah, there were a couple.
Girls or guys?
A little of both, actually.
And now?
Kind of figured out that I'm gay, if that's what you're asking.
Great. Me too.
God, I feel like I've been put through the third degree here.
I'm sorry. I just have this insatiable curiosity about the people I find attractive.
Aw.
He is so cute in this scene, Doug Savant.
So cute. Yeah. This whole episode is a good one for him because he's happy. It's nice.
Yeah. And, you know, in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also nice. But, like, he really does this, like, meme-worthy, like, the minute he figures out Rob's gay, he's like, uh-huh. Like, leans forward and his tie is, like, in the barbecue sauce. It's great.
Yes. I mean, the writing on that was awkward. Like, I, you know, as soon as Matt asked, do you date guys? I feel like in real life, Rob would be like, oh, the reason you're asking is that you also date guys. But they have to write it this way.
I mean, come on.
You know, it's cute. It's the past. People didn't know. I mean, the audience. Obviously, gay guys on a date would know once they figured out it was a date.
Yeah.
So then Allison comes home to blah a bunch of shit about work we already know before realizing that she doesn't know where her parents are. And Billy realizes Rob isn't back yet either. So maybe the futon was for him. I'm so obsessed with who's sleeping on the futon. Anyway, cut to the courtyard where Rob confirms to Matt's question that he's never found the right time to tell Billy that he dates guys, having not done so until after college. And Matt is sure Billy would be fine with it. But Rob says he doesn't think this weekend is the appropriate moment for the disclosure either. Like, I truly don't think Billy would give a shit, but Matt doesn't push it because, you know, it's not his business. And that also seems to scan and make sense to me. So then Matt and Rob are exchanging a warm handshake. Good night. And then Matt pulls Rob in and like the footage slows down. It's clear there was a kiss here that got cut, like that, you know, standards and practices came back and were like, no, no. But that Billy sees them kiss.
Yeah.
Even though we don't. But Billy witnesses it because he's like, oh, my God. It's very funny. So the gif of this whole sequence is in the visual aids because it's like such a time capsule, man.
Yeah, it really. And then cut to Billy like just smelling a fart for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Really? You live in a Los Angeles.
Yeah. You live in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, honestly. Anyway.
Yeah.
That night, Allison has another nightmare in which her kid self wakes up, walks up the basement steps, calling for her mommy to help her, and then dropping that fucking creepy doll before Allison wakes up yelling. And then her actual mother does come in to help her, along with Mr. P. We see Allison sleeping alone, so Billy is on the futon. See? I'm like futon police. Anyway, Allison grasps that she was a kid and she was so scared, while Mr. Parker looks guilty as hell. And eventually a very groggy Billy makes his way into, and Mr. Parker minimizes the whole thing and then drifts out while Allison says it's fine. And Mrs. Parker guesses she just misses her mother. Sure. And while Allison continues letting her mother rock her, Billy also just shambles out uselessly. And the next morning, Billy's just confirmed on his way out to work that Allison's okay before seeing Matt, also leaving for work and asking him to wait. And Matt gives him this huge hug and asks about his nerves since his wedding eve. Like, it's because his giddiness of, like, having met a guy. But also, he's just nice. Like, he's a nice friend. It's very sweet.
He also might be kind of giving Billy some shit.
He might.
I mean, he doesn't know what Billy saw, but it's also, like, it was funny to imagine that Savant was playing it as though Matt thought Billy had seen it.
Right.
And was just like...
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Thought it was funny.
I mean, I do think generally in this scene, Doug Savant is like, as usual, giving us more than is on the page.
Because
then what happens is Billy awkwardly segues to seeing Matt and Rob, and like, Doug Savant gives him like so many faces, like, before Matt finally rescues Matt by Billy by saying, yes, we kissed. Billy confirms that is what he saw and adds that it's okay, and then tries to get Matt to explain what led up to that moment, implying that like Rob was drunk, he wanted to experiment. And Matt does not co-sign that take, but gently says whatever Rob was doing is his business, and if Billy wants to know what Rob's deal is, he needs to talk to him directly. The most important thing is that Rob's a wonderful guy and Billy and he are lucky to have each other as friends. Billy is like, makes a lot of very, Andershue rather, makes a lot of really funny, gobsmacked, like flabbergasted faces through this, which are all in the visual aids. Billy has no response to that. He just says he's late and takes off. And Matt's like, okay. It's very funny.
Oh.
And then considering how dark the episode ends, like it's a nice moment of levity that we need. And then it's the wedding day. Get your barf bucket, clip 20.
We're getting married today, honey. This is your last chance to back out.
Never in a million years. I've never been more sure about anything or anybody in my whole life. It's like I lived my whole life just to get here. Just to have you.
Oh. Well, you got me, babe. For the rest of your life.
Why does that sound like a threat? Also, has she ever called Billy honey before? It sounds so unnatural coming out of her.
Yeah.
Fortunately, yeah. That's the end of their exchange because Mrs. Parker comes out to take Allison to go get ready. And then Billy goes into the living room to find Rob tearing up the futon and says, clip 21.
I think I found your studs.
It's just one stud and he's a few doors down. Oh!
Oh!
But he means the cufflinks. Billy then uses this moment of calm to broach the subject of the man-on-man smooching he saw. Rather, Rob thinks he is gay. Rob doesn't seem thrilled about how Billy learned this information, but says, yes, he is gay. And to Billy's question, Rob says he's always known, including when they were in college. Billy is shocked. Rob wasn't sure Billy wanted to know, but Billy says he's Rob's best friend. And then, clip 22.
So, were you ever attracted to me?
No.
There are actual birds chirping. I love it. And now.
Very funny. Billy pretends to be offended, asking why not. Rob claims he was looking for someone more stable, which, I mean, Matt is perfect then, but they end with moderate bro roughhousing that will not rumble their formal wear. So then Joe finds Jane putting the finishing touches on Allison in her gown, which it looks better than it did on the dress form, but still very 80s considering it's 1994. Yeah. And her hair looks fucking awful.
Oh my God. It's just so, like, I understand that it is a wedding taking place in the mid 1990s, but like everything about it is just so safe, and except the hair, which is outright bad.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta comb it out.
It's so sticky. Looks so sticky.
Awful.
There's also Jane's choice to put the bridesmaids in these, like, dumb boleros that are, like, instantly totally wrinkly. Like, they look like shit. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Allison gushes that she can't believe she's getting married. She never thought she would. And Jane and Joe are the best friends anyone could ever have. And they all hug. They do their something bored, blah, blah, blah. Mrs. Parker then comes in to do some final my baby's getting married burbling when Mr. Parker brays in to ask for a moment with his favorite daughter before he walks her down the aisle. And he closes the door before saying she looks beautiful and he's so proud and asks her to tell him he'll always be daddy's little girl, which would be gross even if we didn't know what memory she was about to recover. But anyway, for now, she just rushes into his arms. And then clip 23.
I love you, Pumpkin, more than anybody. Shh. Don't cry. Don't cry. Shh. Shh. Don't cry, baby. Don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry. What's wrong? Honey.
All this time I thought I was crazy. But I'm not. You're a monster.
Allison, what are you talking about?
You did things to me when I was a kid. In the basement. Didn't you?
Honey, you're not making sense.
You did. Oh, God, you molested me.
Listen. It never happened. Now, do you hear me? It never happened. No, listen to me. Listen to me. You say anything to anybody, I swear to God, I'll kill you. Now, you hear that? I will.
Well, we finally got there. Took a while, but yeesh.
Yeah, even the scene seemed to take a really long time. It was not, like, given how long everyone involved must have known that this was where it was going, that should have been better acted and edited than that, in my opinion, but at least it's finally out.
Indeed. Ooh, gross.
Sorry.
So after commercial, everyone in the courtyard's getting restless about how long it's taking for the ceremony to get started. And Mr. Parker tries to cover and keep everyone away from the apartment. But Jane finally gets suspicious and goes in to look for Allison and instead finds the gown and the veil on Allison's bed and the window wide open. She comes out to the courtyard to report the shocking news. When everyone else busts in, Billy finds the note she left him under her pillow, which just reads, "I'm sorry, I just can't. It's not you. Love, Allison." And breathlessly pacing, Billy asks, "If it's not him, who is it? What's going on?" So then Jake is the one to announce to the guests that the bride isn't feeling well, so the wedding will be postponed. True. And yet false. So then night has fallen, and after some very generic B-roll, we're in San Francisco, and Allison's letting herself in a literal white picket fence in front of a perfect Victorian house, although not a row house, because it's not in San Francisco. It's actually in Los Angeles. And if Meredith lives there, I guess she's a billionaire. But anyway, she knocks on the door. Tracy Nelson comes out in a very 1994 brown velvet jumper over portrait collar top, wider than her straps. Real 94 vibes. Of course, this is a famous Meredith. They hug and smile and cry and whatever. The next morning, Billy's called Allison's description into the cops and tells her parents he's going to go drop off a picture. And Mrs. Parker starts getting hysterical about Allison's possibly having been abducted. Like, by someone who made her take off her gown and carefully lay it on the bed first. But Mr. Parker says it was just a bad case of cold feet and she'll probably be back any minute. And then he asks whether Billy's called all of Allison's friends and all of her old boyfriends. And instead of answering that one, Billy remembers that Mr. Parker was the last one to see her and asks what they said to each other. And this seems to trigger something in Mrs. Parker, who steps away from Mr. P as Billy and he argue about Billy's tone and which of them is actually to blame. And then in San Francisco, Allison's ready to talk, saying she knows finally why Meredith ditched the family and explains how Mr. Parker's creepy wedding whisper triggered the memory she thought was a nightmare. She realized she buried the traumatic memory so she could go on with her life, but he did it to Meredith too, didn't he? And she cries with remorse that she couldn't help Allison because it was happening to her too. She felt so guilty she wanted to kill herself. And as they hug, Allison gets more info. Clip 24.
What about Mom? She couldn't have known. But there are times when I think she must have known. She just did nothing. I confronted him once. I was 12 and you were 7.
What'd he say?
He said he would kill me if I told anyone. And I believed him, Allison. I thought he was going to kill us both.
So, you got quiet and tried to disappear, and I just plain forgot.
God, I wish I could forget.
No, Meredith, it's better to know and deal with it. Much better. I promise you.
So you think it's a plus that you walked out on your own wedding? Normal people don't do that kind of thing, Allison.
I think that's exactly what they do. Because no matter how bad Dad made us feel, we're still the normal ones, Meredith. Not him.
Brutal.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, there's no winners in this, let's be real.
Yeah, anyway. No.
So they hug again as they say how much they missed each other and then somehow do not go straight to the topic of how Meredith can afford this house. And that night, as we see how hard Meredith went on the Victorian theme as Allison reads on an incredibly fussy couch, Meredith comments that Allison can't hide there forever. Like, doesn't she think she should call Billy? And Allison says she can't, and then until they talk to their dad, clip 25.
Sorry, I can't do that.
Why not?
Because I just got my life back together, Allison. I'm not going to screw it up by dredging up the past.
But neither one of us can have a life. A real life until we face this. Until we confront Dad about what he did to us.
No. Okay? No. I can't.
You're still afraid, aren't you?
Yeah. I am.
Don't be, Meredith. We have each other now. Dad can't hurt us anymore. Come here.
I don't get it.
So as they hug, the camera pans over their shoulders and we see their dad is standing in the yard staring through the window like a creep. And that's where we leave the Parkers for season two. Oof. Blech. Yeah. Ugh. Finally, we've arrived at our A-plot. Kimberly and Sydney figure out they should team up. So we join Michael and Kimberly after they've just had some morning delight. He's all set, but she's apparently trying to murder him with sex. Clip 26.
Lady.
Let's do it again.
Oh, no, no.
Sorry. Party's not over until I say it is.
Okay. Yeah.
So then there's like this rest of the scene is just seems like it's recapping where she was and how he married Sydney and what happened then and why and blah, blah, blah. So he gets really defensive about it and then downshifts and calls her baby and says he's sorry. Although she points out that if he had gone to the cops when Sydney was threatening him, then they would have found out that Kimberly was alive, and that is true, but whatever. So Kimberly tells him to stop whimpering and start apologizing, which I thought that's what he was doing, but maybe she means saying it directly to her vulva, if you know what I mean. And he makes a face like, if I must, and sex resumes. So then over to the studio, Jane is making a presentation to some dude showing how she reworked vintage pieces with a modern twist. Who cares? No. Also, I doubt it. She's so keyed up that he finally has to tell her to stop because he likes what he sees. And since he's wearing a dress shirt with the collar tab undone over the tie, I'm not sure we should trust him on fashion matters, but fine. He's intrigued by the samples, but could she fulfill a large order? She claims she could. He wants to discuss things further the next day over dinner. And then adds that she's the most beautiful designer he's ever met. And she just thanks him and doesn't seem concerned about what his horniness could mean for their nascent working relationship. Speaking of working, over to Hollywood Boulevard by night, where some sex workers are on a corner looking for dates when Sydney, in a very weird blue satin look, comes carefully picking her way up the sidewalk toward them. They spot her immediately and obviously know what she is trying to do and yell at her that she's working their turf and accost her. And instead of just finding another block, she's all, it's a free country, and tells them to crawl back into whatever the hole they came out of. And long story short, does not end well for her, and they beat her ass and leave her on the sidewalk. She ends up at Kimberly's hospital. Kimberly's on duty as Sydney is wheeled in. She asks one of her fellow doctors, actually, it's the super good looking guy that treated Joe in the other episode. And he tells her it was clip 27.
A couple street whores in a fight.
What did you call us?
Wow.
That's the only reason I clipped that. Kimberly's not so far gone that she's not upset to see Sydney all beaten up, and quietly tells her she'll be fine. And Michael's going to pay for what he did to Sydney and to both of them. So the next day, Sydney's in the hospital. Oh, it was in this episode. It wasn't the next one. Sucking on a milkshake and reading her tabloid, hashtag best life, when Kimberly comes in to check on her. And once they establish that Michael doesn't know Sydney's there, and also why Sydney was out trying to earn fast money, Kimberly says she's recommending that Sydney be released that day and gives her some cash, telling her to stay off the streets and get her act together. Sydney's suspicious about why Kimberly's being so nice to her, so Kimberly tells her to meet at the Griffith Park Observatory that night. Cut to Jane and her date, whose name is Chris Marchette. Presumably his middle name is Phyllis. They're at Montezino's, the only nice restaurant on Melrose Place, boringly flirting. Clip 28.
Even when I was a little girl, I used to design them for my dolls.
Design. Oh, God. Every time.
Every time. She puts an end to the flirting when she says she doesn't want to feel like she needs to sell herself in order to sell her line. And he says she doesn't. He finds her extremely attractive, but wouldn't let those feelings get in the way of any business they might do together. And then proposes that she create a junior's line for his stores. he could provide the funding in exchange for a piece of the company. She admits she has a silent partner she'll need to talk to. He can't imagine that Michael would have a problem with this proposal, and Jane agrees and orders champagne because she will never learn not to get ahead of herself. Never. And then Sydney and her excellent fringed jacket meet Kimberly at the observatory, and once they've established that Sydney feels much better, they get to it. Clip 29.
When you came into the emergency room the other night, all beaten and bloody, I experienced this incredible feeling of deja vu. I felt like I was looking at myself after the accident. And it occurred to me, we have a lot in common, you and I. We're both victims of Michael Mancini. Thanks to Michael's treachery, you've been alienated from your family, forced to turn tricks on the street, and I was almost killed. And all I could think about during those agonizing months of recuperation was revenge for what Michael had put me through.
It was a car crash. That was an accident. Michael thought you were dead.
How dare you defend him? The man is a monster. He has no feeling or regard for anyone but himself. Sooner or later, he's going to dump me and move on to his next victim. He's a menace, Sydney, that must be contained.
What can we do?
Same thing you do to a rabid dog. Put him out of his misery.
You mean murder?
No, I mean justice. My God, after everything he's put you through, the humiliation, the deceit, the rejection... Don't you want to see him dead?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, we're gonna do it. Together.
Love it.
Yep.
This is the team up we were waiting for, frankly.
For sure.
So the next morning, Kimberly's waiting on Michael at breakfast, agreeing to bring him a new grapefruit since the first one, he says, was bitter. Like, no shit, bro, it's a grapefruit. Why do people eat this? It's terrible. don't at me. I don't want to hear from the grapefruit council. Grapefruit suck.
Look, I love grapefruit, but like complaining. You drink Fresca. You live on it.
That's not real grapefruit. That's barely...
I understand that, but, I mean, you don't hate everything grapefruity, just saying.
Yeah. Look,
grapefruits are not worth the juice is not worth the squeeze, like, literally in actuality, but, like, complaining that it's bitter is, like, why?
And Dave is leaned back because he's getting in on this. Dave likes grapefruit, too.
Yeah.
He doesn't Hi, Dave. Care to comment. Then Jane shows up with papers for Michael to sign, about which she is predictably vague, other than to say the move is in both their best interests, finally offering to have Chris call Michael and explain the deal to him in terms he'll understand, but warning him not to fuck it up. Kimberly, anything to add? Clip 30.
Go home, you condescending bitch, and we'll let you know what we think.
I also love that, like, Jane is just like... very epitome of impotent fulmination anytime she has to deal with these two. Like, could you figure it out, dude?
Yes.
Please?
Honestly. So Jane, yes, Jane tells Kimberly not to talk to her that way. And Kimberly's like, ooh. She should.
So good.
Yes, that is there in both GIF and still form, depending on your needs, for meme purposes in the visual aids. Kimberly leaves to check on a patient, telling Jane as she goes to keep her hands off Michael, who does a smug little shimmy. Are you guys aware that all three of you could hate fuck each other at once? Because you might like it and it would possibly solve a lot of your problems. Again, I am just throwing it out there. Cut to the park where Sydney and her 90s look. Opinions are divided on it, but there are Doc Martens and a dress. Are having a wholesome froze fruit break while she and Kimberly, while they cheerfully discuss how they're going to kill the shit out of Michael. Clip 31.
How about the old blow dryer and the bathtub routine?
Little never takes baths. Mm. Besides, it's more than likely that the fuse would blow before he actually fries.
Well, I'd love to get him in the ocean somehow at night.
Mm. Michael's a strong swimmer, Kimberly. The autopsy report could show signs of a struggle.
You're right. You're right.
Don't forget, he did have a pretty nasty painkiller addiction following the accident. I found him once passed out on the bathroom floor. I think I saved his life.
Well, that was stupid.
Why don't we just slip him an overdose, make it look like a suicide?
Nah, he'd probably regurgitate before they actually did the trick. But you've given me an idea, and the painkillers are only a part of it.
This processy discussion is really amazing. And I love that they're just like outside too, because Tony fears parabolics. Just like, you know, having a frozen novelty, strolling by the beach in one of them. White tights.
Yeah.
This is my issue. Also, the hat has got to go.
It's very blossomy.
You'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see.
So Kimberly goes back to the hospital and takes Sydney's germ of an idea to Dr. Levin, clip 32.
It's about Michael.
Dear God, what is it this time?
Well, ever since the board terminated him as chief resident, he's been very depressed. Severely depressed.
Good.
Levin. Levin.
Yep. But she says it's not. He's been abusing painkillers again, drinking to excess, and expressing suicidal ideation. She's suggested therapy, but he won't go. But she hoped Dr. Levin could make counseling a condition of Michael's tenure so he would be forced to speak to someone. And Dr. Levin makes a hilarious, I'm not fucking doing that face, which you can see in the visual aids. But he loves Kimberly, and so he says he'll see what he can do. So then Jane and Chris take a walk in the marina, bitching about Michael, his obstructionism, and she asks if there's any way to do the deal that wouldn't require Chris to take a piece of the company so that they could leave Michael out of it, but there isn't. And when she's like, whenever something good happens in my life, Michael comes along and ruins it, Chris is like, not everything, and then they kiss. Who cares? So Kimberly's just fucked Michael real nice when he says he has to go meet Jane. Kimberly doesn't know why, since he's not going to sign off on the deal, but he loves to watch Jane squirm. She asks if he wants a beer before he goes. He does, if she gets it, which she does. She gets him a beer light, like totally Coors Light label, except just says beer light.
I know.
And then she grabs her little bottle of poison with a dropper top. It's just in the kitchen cupboard, like beside the international coffee tin.
The coffee internationale.
Yes, and okay. I assume that's the reason why she's been waiting on Michael so much. Like, so did she just keep, like, her poison wherever without worrying that he's going to go looking for anything when he's making his own food? Otherwise, I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't either.
Anyway, so she gets the poison out and puts some in Michael's beer. And sometimes later, I guess it's not beer, it's a sedative. Michael's laid the fuck out on the bed when Kimberly and Sydney come in, all business. A lot of light denim in this shot as well. Mm-hmm. They have to get Michael in the garage before he wakes up, and they wrangle him into the driver's seat of the car, use his fingers to turn the key, and exposit the plan just for us, clip 33.
Okay. He should be done in about 3 hours. I'm going to go for a walk down to the Malibu Cantina so I can come back and find him.
How can we do this? It's inhuman.
Sydney, you're looking at human garbage who would have run you over as soon as look at you.
When Michael's dead, God's going to do a jig. Now, get out of here. Head out to Palm Springs, stay overnight, and make sure somebody sees you.
We both loved him so much, I can't believe it's come to this.
Oh, put a sock in it, would you?
Yeah.
I love her so.
I do too. But this is also where Kimberly is like, oh, maybe I picked the wrong partner for this. Perhaps I should have partnered up with Jane. She might have.
Seriously.
But it's too late now. Anyway, time passes and we fade to the studio where Jane and is bitching about how inconsiderate Michael is for blowing off their meeting. Her outfit in this scene, I have in my notes, Jesus, her Daisy Buchanan look. She's in like this dumb bedazzled beret, and like it's all white. It's her bangs are fucked up. It's using the visual aids. I can't describe it. There's a vest. It's bad.
Yeah.
Chris points out that Jane could just quit and start a new company without Michael, but she would risk bankruptcy, lose clients, harm her reputation. She decides that if Michael, the selfish piece of trash, won't come to them, they will go to him. And they do, finding Michael still passed out in the car in the garage full of exhaust. And they haul him out up to the driveway together, and Jane does CPR and revives him completely himself, even when he was probably moments away from actual death. Michael smarms to Jane that that was a hell of a kiss. Love him. And the next day, Michael staggers out from the bedroom moaning about his weird night. The weirdest thing about this scene is that he's in, like, full matching shirt and pants pajamas. The past really was a different time. So many ways. You just never see that anymore. But anyway, Kimberly leaps up, cooing comforting noises to get him some aspirin. And they have this exchange, clip 34.
Oh, you know, I just can't figure out how I fell asleep at the wheel.
I don't know. It happens to people all the time. It's a good thing you weren't on the road. You could have wound up rolling down a hill again.
Yeah, but it wasn't late, and then I was waking up with Jane all over me. I thought I was in a time warp.
Yeah, it looked weird to me, too. I mean, I came back from the beach, and you had your head in her lap.
I was half unconscious. I don't know where I was.
Oh, I am not blaming you, sweetheart. I just wish you'd get out of our lives for good. I mean, she irritates me. Always has. Her and her stupid little design shop deal. Coffee?
Yeah, sure. So, how did I get in the car?
All I remember is that we shared a beer after having absolutely incredible sex.
Yeah, I remember that.
Me too. And then you went into the bathroom to have a shower, and I went for a walk out on the beach and then down to Malibu Cantina to pick up some dinner. And when I came back, you were lying in the driveway with your ex-wife. You don't suppose she and that boyfriend of hers are trying to hurt you, do you?
I don't know. Stranger things have happened. We'll just have to keep our eyes on them, won't we?
As long as it's from a distance, baby, it's fine with me.
I just love that he, like, actually, you can bullshit a bullshitter. Like, mm-hmm. She's being so over the top, and he's just like, all right.
Yeah.
I almost got her killed, but this all tracks. Whatevsies.
Yep.
Love it.
Yeah, every time she brings up, like, that time you almost killed me, ha ha ha, and, like, he never puts it together, like, oh, she's still upset about that. Like, just never at all. It's a great detail.
It is.
So then Jane's on her way through the courtyard at the wedding to get Allison something blue when Michael waylays her. To Sarah's point in the last episode, it's very weird that he is there at all, but sure, why not? And of course, Kimberly is there as his date, also improbably dressed and braless, by the way.
Yeah. Red satin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All nip. Okay.
Sure. Jane does not want to talk, obviously. But Michael will be brief. He thanks her for saving his life, but he won't be signing on to the department store deal because he likes their business small and doesn't want Jane to get so successful that she has ego problems. And also warns her not to try Chris's business dumping maneuver because Michael has lawyers. Jane barks that she should have let Michael die, which, honestly, probably true, and then adds loudly enough for several witnesses to hear that if he doesn't leave her business alone, she swears she will kill him. Perfectly done, Kimberly. The wedding is supposedly just about to start when Sydney comes in, bitching that it's going to be going on all day, like she doesn't have enough problems. And then Michael turns around and she gasps in shock to see him alive and backs out again. Kimberly goes after her and outside the gates, briefly and not very quietly, explains how their plan got fucked up and orders her to go get a drink at Shooters while Kimberly gets things back on track. And in the general hubbub after Jake announces that the wedding is, cough, postponed, Kimberly walks into Jane's wide-open apartment door and grabs her car keys from their hook next to the door. And the next morning, when Joe and Sarah come down in the morning, Joe in an ankle-length jumper, because 1994, Jane is telling a couple of cops that her car is gone. And I was so glad we put this look in the visual aids and we're like, I should hate this, but I don't. Similarly, I want to rank on Jane's off-white day nightgown and clunky off-white shoe look, but I 100% had the same thing, both parts, like, at that time.
Same. and would consider getting the little lace-up Oxfords again because mm-hmm. they're very comfortable and cute. Maybe not white, but
yeah,
they were cute. Mm-hmm.
So since Jane also noticed her missing keys, Joe wonders if the culprit was runaway bride Allison, and clip 35.
Wow, things are sure getting weird around here.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah,
we love
when do you have a completely different hairstyle later today?
So the next day, I guess it's the next day, a nurse tells Michael he got an urgent page from Jane to meet her at the coffee shop across the street from the hospital. It's a matter of life and death. And he's like, this better be good. But he is, in fact, jaywalking to said coffee shop when a Volkswagen Beetle comes tearing around the corner. Michael and his amazing survival instincts just stop dead in the middle of the lane as this car accelerates toward him and slams right the fuck into him. And moments later, he's being rushed into the ER where doctors and EMTs work on him. And apparently he's not doing great, even though he just like flipped over the car and fell. Cut to the studio where a couple of cops walk in asking for Jane. She thinks it's good news about her car, but it's bad news about her car because they have a warrant for her arrest on a hit and run. Witnesses took down her license plate number and her description. She protests that she reported the car stolen, but the cop points down to the curb out front where her car is parked with the windshield totally caved in, which, like, guys, use your head. Would she then drive an obviously incriminating vehicle to her office and then just go to work? But, you know, they're not thinking that far ahead, and she gets arrested, and that's where we leave the season two finale.
Oh, woo! I'm exhausted.
Me too. God, that was long. Okay. Let's quickly name our episode MVP. Kimberly moved.
Yes,
plot.
Kimberly. It is not close.
No, it was not. She moved plot and she looked amazing doing it, other than when we saw her nipples very clearly through her wedding dress.
I mean, she looked good.
Just she did.
Maybe not a day wedding, Luke.
No, she looked cold. That's all.
Yeah, she did. She looked a little chilly.
Least valuable player.
The Parkers.
Yeah, collectively.
Oof. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, good call.
Can I ever tell you where that clip comes from?
No.
Well, you know the theme music, like the show is called Again With This.
Uh-huh.
And so when the theme came, I was looking for something appropriately Jewish.
Sure.
You know, because that was that's the phrase.
Yes.
Again With This.
Yeah.
And attached to that search for the music was Old Jewish Grandma Groaning Disapprovingly. It's the name of the clip. I don't know why I just remember that.
Nice. Yeah, let's do the season MVP.
I mean, can we say Kimberly, even though she was gone for most of it?
Yeah, I think that's okay.
Bias?
I think that's fine. I'm going to still say Amanda because she makes the show what it is way more so in season two, even than she did in season one, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
She's a great villainess.
And
she's easier to root for. She's not an actual, I mean, other than sexual harassment, I guess. She's not an actual criminal the way that Kimberly is. She's just like.
Yet.
She's yeah. True. All right, season two least valuable player. I'm going to say poor Matt, who we hardly ever see, and us, the poorer for it.
Yeah, well, I was going to say standards and practices, because even when Matt gets a storyline, it's very formal.
Bowdlerized, yes.
Yeah, I mean, honorable mention to Allison.
Yeah. All right, we did it.
We did. Next time on Again With This, Mr. Parker can lose. The wheels of justice grind up the Andrew sisters, and the true originator of I Choose Me is revealed. You should choose a scopolamine patch before you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane. So browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. Don't make me use the word exegetical. Just go over there.
I'm Deep Deep Mess SDB, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Poolside Chat Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our highly irregular producer is David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Go home, you condescending bitch, and we'll let you know what we think.
Love it.
Yes.